Hi, this is Dr. Bill Meyer. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Dr. Bill Meyer Live. You can hear the show live every Saturday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m., and there are many more podcasts for this and all our other faith radio shows available on our website. You can just go to myfaithradio.com. And thanks so much for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
He's a psychologist, an author, and a veteran broadcaster. But most importantly, he's a dad. Welcome to Dr. Bill Meyer Live on the Faith Radio Network. Stay tuned for a faith and culture connection, a biblical perspective on current events, and practical family advice with psychologist Dr. Bill Meyer. You can join the conversation by calling 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. Now, let's join Bill Meyer live.
Welcome. How should Christians deal with Halloween? It's just a week away. Should we allow our kids to go trick-or-treating? Should we plan our own alternative events such as harvest festivals or trunk-or-treat things in our church parking lots? What should we do on Halloween night at our house? Should we turn off our lights and hide inside and not answer the door to those tiny minions who are roaming the streets? Or is it possible that we could actually be part of redeeming Halloween? That's what today's guest argues, and she has a lot of history and scripture to back up her claims. Stick with us as we talk to author and speaker Kim Weir about her book, Redeeming Halloween, Celebrating Without Selling Out. Kim's going to join us here in just a few minutes on the Faith Radio Network. And this is one of those issues that always generates a lot of controversy. I'll tell you, I've interviewed Kim before, and there are people that are, they have very strong opinions on both sides of this issue. And certainly there's a lot of very disturbing things about Halloween. And in recent years, it's become a very dark holiday in many ways. And yet there are some Christians who say, you know what, we're going to make a difference on Halloween night. We're going to meet our neighbors. We're going to give out the biggest candy bars in the neighborhood. And we're going to just, you know, share Christ's love with people. And Kim will help us kind of wade through these issues. And stick around. We'll be talking to her in just about 10 minutes on the Faith Radio Network. By the way, speaking of Halloween, if your kids are going trick-or-treating or going to a harvest festival next weekend, or you're doing some kind of trunk-or-treat thing, something you should know about. A U.S. senator is warning about the dangers of Halloween face paint. Senator Chuck Schumer from New York says the federal government is not testing Halloween face paint made in China, and some of it has some truly scary toxic chemicals in it. The Food and Drug Administration does not conduct routine checks of cosmetic products or face paints, and they can contain heavy metals like lead and nickel and cobalt and chromium. Can you believe that? Senator Schumer says, every Halloween, we worry about the candy we're putting in our kids' mouths, but nowadays, we need to worry about the face paint we're putting on their faces. According to a report by the Campaign for Safe Cosmetics, 10 face paints they checked all contained heavy metals, and 6 had other dangerous chemicals. Again, most of these made in China. Still, most parents believe that face paints that they're buying in the store are safe. And Senator Schumer says it's not true. He says parents are totally clueless as to what they're putting on their kid's face. He points out that lead is banned from makeup in Canada and Europe, but it is not prohibited from makeup sold in the United States. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has said that children are more vulnerable to lead poisoning than adults are. And according to Senator Schumer, he says the U.S. is simply not doing enough to protect our children from these harmful ingredients, and that is a scary thought. And although I disagree with a lot of things that Senator Schumer says and have for many years on many issues, I have to agree with him on this one. This is very troubling. And mom and dad, if you are planning to put face paint on your kids this coming week or this next weekend for Halloween or for a harvest festival, please make sure that what you get is something that is safe and not something from some foreign country that has not been tested. This might be a good week to get your kids to eat more fruits and vegetables Any week is a good week to get your kids to eat more fruits and veggies. How do you do that? Well, according to one new research study, show them the money. Yes, Fox News is reporting on an experiment conducted at 6 Utah elementary schools. The goal was to get kids to make healthier choices at their lunch. Now, one group of kids received praise for eating more fruits and veggies. Some got cash rewards, and a third group didn't get anything at all. They just got the fruits and veggies. And yes, as you might have guessed, the kids who got the cash ate significantly more fruits and vegetables. Study co-author Greg Madden at Utah State University says rewards can be used to encourage children to repeatedly try fruits and vegetables, and there is some evidence that after they've tried them a few times, they're more likely to choose them in the future. So the big question I had is, what happens after the reward stopped? What happened after they stopped paying these kids to eat broccoli? Well, the researchers checked back with those kids 6 months later, and they actually, I guess they filmed them secretly. They videoed them to see what they put on their lunch trays and what they ate in the cafeteria. And they found that the students that had received those prizes 6 months earlier were still eating significantly more fruits and vegetables than their classmates. However, even when those rewards work in school, that doesn't guarantee they will work at home. Samantha Heller is a nutritionist at New York University, and she says rewarding good behavior such as healthy eating is a step in the right direction. But she says that children still need strategies for managing healthy eating choices outside their cafeteria and when those rewards stop. And, you know, I actually eat pretty healthy, but it would take a whole lot of cash to get me to try one of those kale smoothies. Ah, please. My wife, for some reason in recent months, is starting to eat more kale. And I don't know, maybe her sister's kind of a health nut. And so I guess, and again, we eat healthy. We eat salads all the time, low fat. You know, we try to really limit our you know, amount of red meat that we eat. And we try to eat lots of whole grains, and we don't drink sugary sodas and all that. But kale? Come on, man. That stuff is just horrible. And the way she makes it is she puts this kind of, I think it's like a guacamole kind of paste, a coating on it, and she swears by it. But I swear I'll never eat it because I try to bite and it turned my stomach. Okay, I'm going to stop criticizing kale because I know I'm going to hear from all the kale fans this morning. It's 11 minutes past the hour. This is the Faith Radio Network. I'm Bill Meyer. And coming up, is it possible to redeem Halloween? Is it truly just simply an evil, evil day on the calendar and we all need to hide inside and turn off our lights? Or, as Christians, is there something positive we can do to actually redeem the holiday? We'll talk to Kim Weir, who has researched this and has some, I believe, really great ideas. That's coming up next here on the Faith Radio Network.
Conversation continues right now, and we want to hear from you. Call us at 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484. Now, here's Dr. Bill Meyer again on Faith Radio.
I'm sorry, didn't mean to interrupt you. You might want to write that phone number down, and you can also spell it out on your phone, which is so cool. 877-93-FAITH, 877-93-FAITH. And if you want to call us this hour, because I'm guessing we're going to have some people that feel pretty strongly about this topic, because it's a topic that always generates a lot of controversy, and that is, how do Christians deal with Halloween? Our guest is Kim Weir. Kim is a writer and a speaker and the host of her own radio show in Houston, Texas. She is co-author of the book Redeeming the Season from Focus on the Family, which actually is a book that every family should get in the next month or two as we approach the Christmas season. A wonderful book with some fantastic ideas that she and her co-author came up with for how we can actually make Christmas more Christ-centered. And today, Kim joins us to talk about her book, Redeeming Halloween, Celebrating Without Selling Out. And Kim, welcome to Faith Radio.
Hey, thanks, Bill. I'm so glad to be with you today.
It is really a pleasure to have you. And I know I mentioned this is a topic that generates a lot of controversy. It's something that you are very familiar with, because whenever you speak on this topic, when you talked about it on Focus on the Family, it certainly generated a lot of phone calls. But let's back
people
up.
People feel strongly one way or the other.
They do. Let's back up a little bit and let's talk about how this whole topic, this whole book came about, because several years ago, you were a mom with young kids and you were kind of grappling with, how are we as a family going to deal with Halloween? We're going to hide inside, turn off the lights and, you know, get under the beds. Or are we going to do something more positive as a Christian family? So let's talk about that struggle that you found yourself in and what you decided to do about it.
Well, I tell you, like every other young mom, you know, you when your kids get old enough, probably about 3 or 4 years old, to see all their classmates excited about Halloween, you can't hide from it anymore. You have to deal with it because you got to talk to your kids about it. And, you know, at the time I was raising our three kids, when they were young, Christian radio was really a buzz about the satanic side of Halloween. And there was this person who was on the radio everywhere saying that he used to be, you know, a high mucky muck in the Wiccan order, and that he did all these rituals, and here's what Halloween was about, and it was everywhere. And so Christians were told, flee from this, don't participate in it. And then, of course, later it turned out this guy was a fraud. He'd never been in there, and everything he said was made up. And bottom line is, it didn't help the confusion. As parents, you know, our goal as Christian parents has always been to raise our children in the things that are excellent and noteworthy and praiseworthy and lovely, and the things that have value and the things that reflect Christ in their life and in the world. And so, but we also struggle with, how can it be right to hide on Halloween, to turn out the lights and just pretend you're not there because I don't want to deal with it? Because no place in Scripture does God advocate us hiding from the world. So it was such a struggle to figure out what to do about that. And every year it came up, like a lot of parents, we were just really happy when November 1st arrived. Because one year we would go out to eat. Well, guess what? All the restaurants are dressed up. You know, so, okay, well, one year we'd say, well, you can dress up and hand out candy, but you can't go get candy. Well, then your kids are like, well, why is it evil to give candy, but it's not evil to get candy? And anyway, we were really struggling with this as parents, trying to figure out what to do. Quite frankly, that's the place we were when the opportunity came up to advise other people on Halloween. I mean, Focus on the Family, because we had already written Redeeming the Season for Christmas, was really helpful for families to have some direction, to not get lost in the, you know, the cultural aspects, the material aspects of Christmas. They said, you know what, could you help families with Halloween? I got to tell you, Bill, our first reaction was, no, because we don't know what to do with it. But I think it was God's sovereignty, because it made us stop, you know, just sort of trying to scramble to get around it. It made us make some decisions to investigate, to find truth, and then to stand on a conviction. Best thing that ever happened for our family was for us to really get serious about finding out truth about Halloween. And we were shocked at what we found out, quite frankly.
Now, you and your co-author, Pam McCune, started doing some research on Halloween, All Hallows Eve, All Saints Day. And tell us, first of all, what you found, because I think a lot of Christians aren't aware of the origins of Halloween, when it first started, when it actually became a holiday, and then how it's changed, how it's kind of morphed over the years, especially here in the United States.
Yeah, well, we were shocked. We were surprised. We didn't really understand what the roots were, and were really surprised when we did discover it. So to really understand the concept of Halloween and where it started, you actually have to go back to the very origins of Christianity. I mean, Jesus had told his followers when he was on earth that they weren't going to conquer and be victorious in this world, you know, by traditional means, but it was going to come through suffering and enduring. And of course, nobody wants to hear that. That's not the path to victory anybody wants. But Jesus was proved right very soon after his ascension, when he left earth and went to heaven. Immediately, his followers began to be persecuted like no other people had ever been persecuted. You know, and it went on for 300 years. It was governmental persecution. It was cultural persecution. The Jews, where most Christians came out of, you know, grew out of Judaism. As faithful Jews came to embrace Christ, they persecuted Christians. For 300 years, they were boiled in oil, thrown into the Colosseum, torn apart by lions, burned at the stake, strangled. I mean, incredible persecution. And the amazing thing is, Bill, and a lot of you guys probably already know this. Maybe you've heard of, you know, some of these incredible stories of those first three centuries of martyrs. Because when you have that kind of persecution, it just stands to reason that, oh, well, they're going to stamp out Christianity. And yet the exact opposite happened, right? I mean,
yes.
When other people saw martyrs standing on their faith with such grace and courage, instead of saying, well, I don't want to be like that, it inspired people. What do they have that could cause them to stand even in the face of death? And so, of course, the church grew and prospered from a spiritual perspective. And there were some incredible, fascinating stories of faith that came out of those first 3 years. You know, if you guys have time, look up the young mother, Perpetua, who wouldn't deny Christ even for the sake of her own son, and Tertullian and Polycarp, and these amazing men and women and even children of faith. Their stories have endured and will pass down from generation to generation to encourage the faith. So that's the background. And it's important to know that because that is the heart of Halloween. So, you know, at around the year 311, 312, the church was finally protected. They were sanctioned by the government. You can argue whether that was a good idea or a bad idea, but anyway, it is the history. And as they began to grow sort of in their protected state and to establish themselves, you know, as a faith, they started instituting things like festivals and days of remembrance. You know, that's how we have Christmas. That's how we have Easter. You know, the church said we need to have these days that remind us of the important parts of our faith, like the birth of Christ and the resurrection of Christ. And so one of the things that they did is they said we really should be celebrating the martyrs who our faith is built on. You know, they imitated Christ and went to their death rather than deny him. We really need to be remembering that. Unfortunately, it got to where there were too many of them for everybody to have their own day. So they decided, let's pick one day on the calendar to remember the faith of the martyrs who went before us. And so I know what you're thinking. You're probably thinking, oh, well, that's October 31st. No, it wasn't. Actually, in the year 610, they picked May 13th, and they called it All Saints Day, a day to commemorate all the saints who had died as martyrs. Now, the Jewish tradition was that you celebrated the night before a festival, that you kind of made that a holy night too, like Christmas Eve before Christmas. So the eve before All Saints Day, which is also called All Hallows, was All Hallows Eve, All Halloween. So Halloween was the 31st, and I mean was the 12th, and then the 13th was All Saints Day. Well, it stayed on the calendar there for about 100 years, and then in the year 710, the church was playing a little bit of strategy, actually probably playing a little bit of defense. Just like the church is in the middle of a corrupt culture now. I mean, nobody can deny that, right, Bill?
It's sure. Just, we talk about that all the time, Kim.
Oh, it's just awful. Well, here's the thing. That's nothing new under the sun, as much as we like to think it is. They were in the middle of a corrupt culture. And one of the pagan holidays that was being celebrated in this culture was a day called Samhain. It's kind of like the Day of the Dead, and they were celebrating spirits and evil and all these kinds of different things. It was a pagan holiday, and it was being celebrated on November 1st. And so the church said, you know what? If we move our All Saints Day and celebrate it instead on the same day pagans celebrate Samhain, maybe we can bring some light into the world. Maybe we can compete and people can begin to, instead, the Christians won't be susceptible to sort of a holiday-ish mood. We'll just make our own holiday. Let's move our own, you know, sanctified day to there. And that's how it got moved to October 31st and November 1st. It's exactly the same strategy the church used when it picked the day for Christmas. Christmas wasn't December 25th because that's when we know Jesus was born, because that was a day when the winter solstice was being celebrated. And the church wanted to play defense and said, you know what? We've got our own holidays that are worth celebrating. We'll have Christmas there. So that's how it all came onto the calendar. Surprise, surprise, Bill, nobody really recognizes it as I've just described it, though. It's not really, it didn't maintain its integrity through the cultures.
So All Saints Day, November 1st, a very important day in the Christian calendar. It has been for, as you said, many centuries.
Yeah,
and I believe I believe the Catholic Church still holds that day as a special day on the calendar. And I don't know if there are masses on those days. I'm not Catholic, but for somehow along the way, we've sort of lost that side of that history, and Halloween has morphed into what it is today. And of course, a lot of that is commercialism. I think we would both agree that, you know, businesses just love to, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, other than Christmas, I believe Halloween generates the most money for retailers.
Billions.
Yeah.
Billions of dollars. I was at the store this morning and, you know, the candy and the costumes and the pumpkins and the, yeah, it is, you're right. It has become a commercial entity. But think about Christmas. If Christ were to be removed from Christmas, and let's not lie, there are lots of places where, for all intents and purposes, it's not a Christian holiday. 90% of the culture would experience Christmas as they do today in no difference. Only the Christians bring in the Christ element. And so, you know, when you think about it, in a way, there is a parallel to Halloween. They're both very commercial. They both, at the root, have a Christian faith message. They both were instituted by the church, and yet they both today resemble very little of how the church created them to be days of faith.
Now, of course, the one big difference we would see in the commercialism is the commercialism that around Christmas time tends to be lights and tinsel and Christmas trees and Santa Claus and elves, and those are all positive things. But the commercialism that surrounds Halloween is ghouls and goblins and vampires and mummies and
all the dark things.
Yeah, the things we see in people's front yards. My kids are scared sometimes to walk down a certain street because of what might pop out on Halloween night. In fact, we have this one guy who just he revels in digging a hole in his front lawn and building this little trapdoor thing where and the kids gather around because they see this hand coming out of the ground and they think, oh, it's just pretend. And then, of course, he reaches out and grabs them. But it's just been taken on such a dark, feel in recent years. And that's one of the main reasons why Christians tend to flee from it and hold their own alternative events, the harvest festivals, the trunk or treat things. And nothing's wrong with that. The only concern I would have is that it's really, Jesus tells us to be in the world, not of the world. When we remove ourselves, when we lock our doors and turn off the lights on Halloween night and go off to our own little, sanctuaries, our own church parking lots, we are kind of abandoning the culture to that evil part of Halloween, and that's troubling. I want to mention, Kim, that we have three copies of your book to give away, and if you would like a copy of this book, and trust me, it not only will it give you this great history that Kim is talking about, it will also give you some fantastic ideas on how to redeem Halloween itself. In fact, in the next half hour, we're going to give you some practical solutions, some practical fun ideas that you and your family can engage in on Halloween night to redeem the day. And Kim Weir and her co-author Pam McCune have just done a great job in, I think, coming up with some very fun and creative ideas for families. Again, if you want a copy of this book, we'll have a drawing at the end of the hour. Give us a call at 877-93-FAITH, 877-93-FAITH. Give us your contact info, name, address, phone number, email. And at the end of the hour, we will have a drawing for three copies of Redeeming Halloween by Kim Weir and Pam McCune. I'm Bill Meyer. This is the Faith Radio Network. We'll take a quick break and be right back.
Dr. Bill Meyer live on Faith Radio. Get ready to join the conversation. Now let's join Dr. Bill Meyer live.
And welcome back. Is it possible for Christians to celebrate Halloween and actually redeem the day? A day that many of us associate with Satan, with evil, certainly within our neighborhood, with some pretty horrible displays of ghouls and goblins and zombies and you name it. Seems like, man, in just the last couple of years, the holiday has just taken on a real evil turn. And as we've been discussing, part of that is because it's very commercial, and businesses make a whole lot of money by selling that stuff and certainly by selling candy for Halloween night. My guest is Kim Weir. She and her co-author Pam McCune wrote a great book for Focus on the Family called Redeeming Halloween, Celebrating Without Selling Out. And Kim, before the break, one of the things we were talking about is the history of All Hallows Eve, or the Eve of All Saints, All Saints Day being November 1st, a day when we celebrated the Christian martyrs throughout the centuries. Unfortunately, we've kind of lost that in the evangelical church today to really honor those who've gone before, the saints who died giving their lives for Christ. One of the stories you share in the book, which I just thought was so powerful, is the story of the Roman centurions who would not bow to pagan gods and what happened to them at a frozen lake. Can you share that story with us? Because it's beautiful, and I think it's inspiring for all of us.
It's one of my favorites. And, you know, it's a great one for kids. So as you're thinking through, how could I share some of these stories to inspire my kids and give them really a flavor for why we even commemorate All Saints and All Hallows Eve, Halloween? This is a great one. Well, there were these 40 Roman soldiers. They were part of a legion, and 40 of this legion were Christians. And, of course, the governor could not tolerate that. And, you know, they were already persecuted within their, you know, within their legion. And but at some point, the Roman governor just said, enough. You will deny Christ. You know, this is, you'll bow down to Caesar. You'll be like the rest of us, basically. Where we heard that, what the culture wants of us today. And they denied. They said, no, we won't deny Christ. And so the governor thought, well, we'll be able to make them. And so they stripped all of these soldiers of their clothes. They put them in the middle of a frozen lake. They were guarded and surrounded on this lake by all of the other soldiers. And also on the edge of this lake were these hot tubs of water. And they told the soldiers, if you will just deny Christ, you can save yourself and you can run and you can get in these hot tubs of water. And they would not do it. They stood there. They stood their ground and would not deny Christ except for one. And one weakened. And he wasn't willing to face death. And he denied Christ and he ran and he got in the water. But remarkably, one of the soldiers who was guarding them, who was witnessing this, was so moved by the 39 who would not deny Christ, that he was converted on the spot. He stripped off his clothes. He said, I am a Christian. I'll take his place. And he ran out into that frozen lake, and he stood with his new brothers, and he gave up his life there. And that's just one of hundreds of stories of those who would not deny Christ. And, you know, I think, you know, Bill, I think the amazing thing is these may resonate to us more now than they have in any generation that's ever lived in America. As we see regularly on the news, brothers and sisters being martyred for their faith in the Middle East, you know, that it is forefront. It's always happened, but we're seeing it happen with regularity, and we're hearing the stories come out. And so maybe more than any time, this All Saints Day and this Halloween would be a remarkable time to embrace the heart of the holiday as it was created by the church. And again, if you're just joining us, that's the surprising thing. Halloween was actually created by the church. The word came out of the church. And I love it because for us, we really think about embracing it today based on the scripture of Hebrews 13:7, because I think it really captures the day, and it's a command for all of us. It says, remember your leaders who spoke the word of God to you. Consider the outcome of their way of life and imitate their faith. And so we started thinking about, gosh, as moms and dads, how could we employ that principle of remembering the faith of those who've gone before us? The outcome of their way of life was that no matter what, they would not deny Christ. How can we gather that spirit up and bring it into a celebration October 31st and November 1st for our families?
It's an inspiring idea, Kim, and yet I know there are so many Christians who think, gosh, how can you possibly redeem a day that has become so dark? What's the history? How did Halloween over the centuries, and particularly maybe over the past century, century and a half in the United States, how did it take on the form that it has today, which is a far cry from the All Hallows Eve and celebrating the saints of the past that we once celebrated?
Yeah. Well, you know, the American Halloween was always very unique. A lot of it was due to immigrants who would come over, and immigrants from Ireland that had a Catholic background. So they were still holding on to the All Saints Day. And the night before, unfortunately, had been celebrated as what they called Hell Night. And it was a night where, you know, they'd go out and do mischief And the idea is, you know, be nice to us or we'll do mischief to you. Well, the Irish immigrants brought that over to the United States. And in the early 1920s, hell night actually started to become quite a problem in many communities. It went from just little pranks like turning over outhouses to, you know, more severe pranks. And so, believe it or not, the Boy Scouts enter the story when it comes to Halloween. The community leaders really felt like they needed to step in and do something. Just too much damage was being done. So they partnered with the Boy Scouts. Basically, they said to the community, if you will come out, and you boys and girls, all the boys and girls that will come out on quote-unquote Hell Night, which is really Halloween, the eve before All Saints Day, you'll come out and just do good, have fun. We'll give you a treat if you don't do bad things. And so instead of going out and turning over outhouses, they go around door to door and get treats. Well, that sort of just morphed itself into our modern day trick or treating. And so in a sense, it is actually a tradition of light. It was, hey, you know, good is better than evil. You know, they're good are blessed, which, you know, we see in Proverbs that you know, choosing right brings God's blessing. And so, you know, there are a lot of parallels there, but. So, you know, when you go back and you look at a lot of these old traditions, you'll find some of them came from other countries. Some of them are from here. One of them, the jack-o'-lantern, now that's a fun one. That actually came in the New World as immigrants came over to found the United States. In Europe, what they would do is they would use, the poor people would use hollowed out turnips with a small candle in it. That's what they would use for their lantern. And when they came here, lo and behold, guess what they found? They found this great big piece of fruit. They found a pumpkin, and it was already hollowed out. So they realized, look, if we just open it up and hollow it out, it'll make a bigger house lantern. And that's actually where, you know, putting a light in a pumpkin came from. It was just a better lantern. But there's some great stories of the jack-o'-lantern, and it was like a moral parable about, you know, you can't, you know, what you do in this life will have consequences in the next life. And so you can look that up on the internet, the history of the jack-o'-lantern, or we've got it in our book, Redeeming Halloween. But then we say, okay, look, there are some great, why not do that? Why not use parables during Halloween? And we've even got a fun way to use a jack-o'-lantern, you know, to tell kids to point to Christ. So same way you could use an Easter bunny to point to Christ, you know, or the Christmas tree. It's taking some of the elements and, you know what, repurposing them. There's nothing in this world Christ can't redeem. That is the same power that raised Christ from the dead, we're told, is the power that's in us. And certainly we can find ways to bring redemption into all parts of darkness of the world. I mean, that's what we're called to do. Why would we abandon one day on the calendar as if Christ's redeeming power isn't strong enough for Halloween?
All right, let's look at some of those ways that you and your co-author, Pam McCune, came up with to actually redeem Halloween. Some of them have to do with what we actually might do at our home with our own family to prepare for the day. Some actually deal with Halloween night itself and the whole idea of trick-or-treating. You come up with some, I think, some just marvelous, fun, creative ideas that especially families with young children can incorporate into their lives. So let's talk about a few of those because, again, there's nothing wrong with harvest festivals, nothing wrong with trunk or treat events in church parking lots. Those are all fine and good, but they do kind of remove us. They're pulling us out of the world and sending us into our own little Christian bubble. And Beck, I'm going to ask you to comment on that. Get yourself in hot water here, Kim. Do you believe leaving your home on Halloween night and going to a church for a separate, set-apart event is a good idea, a bad idea, or just up to the individual's preference?
Well, you know, people who live in glass houses shouldn't throw stones. That's the old parable. So let me just say, as bringing up my kids, you know, we wrestled with all of these, and some years we do one, some years we do another. But here's kind of an irony. When you remember, I told you that Samhain was the pagan festival, not Halloween. Samhain was a pagan festival, and so the church wanted to compete, so they moved Halloween, the church created day, to the same day. The interesting thing about Samhain is it was a festival centered around harvest. And so when we in the church say, well, we don't want to do Halloween, not realizing it's the church-created holiday, instead we'll do a harvest festival, we actually moved ourselves much closer to the pagan holiday of Samhain. So there's the irony of it. Again, I think it's the intention of the, you know, there we go. It's that sometimes fear will make us do silly things, but I think it's the intention. I love the trunk and treats and the harvest festivals when they are opened up to the community. I think I don't like it when it is here. Only the Christians come. This is our holy huddle, and this is how we keep the bad people out. I was reading something recently, and it said, you know, when we remember in everything that we do that the church is not this sanctuary where holy people go to separate themselves, but it is the hospital where sick sinners come to find healing, then the things that we do, the ministries that we have, the programs that we institute, they're all reaching in the right direction, which is they are saying to the rest of the world, we don't have our lives completely sin-free, but we have found the one who gives us freedom from sin, and you invite them into that. So I love harvest festivals where you invite your neighbors to come be part with you, you know, or a trunk or treat where you take the trunk and treat maybe into a lower income neighborhood where maybe people don't go to church very much or they're not reached out to, and you relocate for their purpose. I love those, you know, but those are just ways to take what you're doing and make it more impactful. Your kids benefit, but you're also reaching out. So, you know, irony, irony, we've done them all. Our church has a harvest festival that they do, and it is open. In addition, it's usually not on Halloween. So it's sort of something we do, and then the kids still go out into the community, want to participate, you know, in being a light. So I never want to tell anybody what to do. Here's the general principle. Don't do things out of fear.
Right.
Because we know that God's never called us to fear. Perfect love casts out fear. You know, light casts out darkness. We are told to be of the world, not in the world, but we're told to be a light on a hill so that others will see it. So if you're doing things because you're afraid, then you need to stop. You need to commit that to prayer, and you need to be able to act in confidence, whatever that action is. And it's going to be different for different families.
Now, it's interesting you mentioned fear, because earlier in the program, you mentioned there was a point, and I want to say it was the 1970s or 80s, when there was a Christian leader, a well-known Christian leader, who made some claims that he had once been a warlock and talked about all these, you know, sacrifices, child sacrifices occurring on Halloween that he had been involved in. And it all turned out to be bunk. It all turned out to be a lie. Give us a little background on that, because I think that's one of the reasons why a lot of Christians do live in fear, because they have this, they sort of have heard through the grapevine that there's all this bad stuff that occurred. Not that there certainly are some bad things that occur on Halloween, and I know because I lived in Los Angeles, and there was an area of town where there were some very bad things that happen on Halloween night. But tell us about that particular part of evangelical history and how it kind of has maybe scared people in a way that they shouldn't be scared.
Well, you know, the whole concept behind it was, look, this Halloween is the high holy day of Satanists. And he came into a lot of detail about it. Of course, he was debunked. But here's the thing about it. I guess the good thing is, for a lot of Christians who forget that we are always in a state of spiritual warfare, there is a prince of this world. And Jesus said he is roaming right now, and his desire is to devour us. In a sense, it was good because it brought a new awareness, I think, to evangelical Christians that, you know, right now, Jesus has said, I'm not reigning and ruling as king. There is a prince of this world. He is defeated. His time is short, and I will rule on this earth. But you need to be careful, be cautious, because he's like a prowling lion. That's the good news. The bad news is it's not just on one day of the year. So for us to all get into tizzy thinking if we can just get out through October 31st and hide in our houses, it'll be okay. That, I think, is the downside to it. It, in one way, it heightened our awareness. In another way, it gave us a false sense of security. So here's the thing. He's always the prince of this world. And our purpose, our way, I was just reading Revelation. It said, you know how you defeat the prince of this world? Through the blood of Christ and the testimony of your witness. And how do we give a testimony if we don't even give it to, if we're hiding in our houses? And so, you know, just apply that same thing to Halloween. And so I do want to give you a few ideas, because I know for those of you who are thinking, I never heard this, I would really like to participate. I want you to have some ideas. For those of you who say, I've heard this, it's still not for me, that's okay. As long as it's in good conscience, it's not in fear, then that's, you know, like all of us, that's between you and the Lord. But I'd love to give you some ideas for families.
Great. Let's start with what you do when the kids are coming to your house and ringing the doorbell on Halloween night.
Good one. Well, so there's three areas that we try to think about, and this is what we told our kids as we were going through. We think of it, you know, like when we think of Christmas, we don't think of Christmas Day. Most of us think of it as Christmas season. And so our challenge is you should really think about, you know, the two or three weeks leading up to Halloween as seasoned, not, you know, so you get more opportunities. So that's kind of a cool way to capitalize on. So during the season, we think of three things we want to do, and this is what we told our kids. Look, we want to celebrate. We want you to have fun. God is the inventor of fun, and he's the one who instituted festivals. So we want to celebrate. Hey, we really want to communicate as a family. How can we communicate this message, our witness? What opportunities do we have? And then third, we want to commemorate those who went before us, like we said from Hebrews 7, those who died for their faith. So celebrating, communicating, and commemorating. Those are the three things we're keeping in mind as we go through the week or two of, before Halloween. Of course, what do you think my kids are most excited about?
We know, trick-or-treating, of course.
Trick-or-treating, that's right. So a couple things. When it comes to sending our kids out, we let our kids dress up. We had a great dress-up closet at our house. And so my kids love to dress up. It's what they, you know, a lot of friends would come over and they'd play act, and they'd do that 365 days a year. Well, it didn't make much sense to us to say, but you can't dress up on October 31st because it's evil on that day. That just makes no sense. So, of course, it's not evil to dress up. We do draw lines. You know, as you were saying, you know, it's a very dark holiday. Well, I'm not going to let my kids embrace darkness on October 1st. Or July 12th or May 7th. So I'm certainly not going to let them embrace darkness on October 31st either. That is a principle in our family, and it is a principle of God's word. So, you know, we say, sure, dress up. And here's where we bring in the idea of embracing the original Halloween purpose. We tell them, dress up as anything you want to dress up, but that in some way represents a group of people that need to hear about Jesus. That's why people died for their faith, because they wanted them to hear about Jesus and realize that he's worth living for and he's worth dying for. Now, when your kids are little, they need help with this. My son wanted to dress up as Nemo. Well, guess what? The fish don't need to hear about Jesus, but sailors do. Sailors need to hear about Jesus. So the week before Halloween, after he decided on his costume, at night when we go to bed that night, we would pray all week long. We prayed that God would send people to the sailors around the world to tell them about Jesus. So whatever costume they picked, we help them think through. So then that week, they're thinking not just of themselves, thinking of other people. And that helps us commemorate the faith that's worth living for, celebrate it. And then guess what they did on Halloween? They went and trick-or-treated. They went door to door in their Nemo costume or their princess costume. They got candy. They came home. They shared it with their mother. you know, we made sure that we didn't stop at the houses that had scary displays, you know, just like wouldn't take my child to a haunted house. That's just a principle we have at our home. Now, what about the kids coming to your house? Well, first of all, we didn't decorate scary. You know what we did do, Bill? We made our house the brightest house in the block. We lit up our house. And so it stood out for its difference. We had hot chocolate if it's cold, or cold water on the porch for parents, so that we were engaging our neighbors when they came to the door. Great opportunity to get to know people you haven't met yet. Hey, how are you? Love your kid's costume. What's your name? Who knows that God might not use that to open a door into building relationships later. So we were the house that was lit up. A lot of times we'd carve our pumpkin with a cross so there was no mistaking that we were the people that loved Jesus. But instead of finding a sign on the door that said, go away, we're Christians, we don't do Halloween, and some, you know, verse that sounded judgmental, instead we were there with, you know, bottles of water, our little cross pumpkin, candy. Maybe we would give out a candy bar with a Bible verse on it or a cute little track. But here's what we do say. If you're going to give out a track, make sure you give out candy with it. The last thing you want is, I visited a Christian home and I was disappointed.
They gave me the four spiritual laws and no candy. Give them the biggest candy bar on the block along with that track, right?
Absolutely. The generous giver. We call it the two-fisted giver.
Kim, we're going to take a quick break, and we have some more ideas from Kim Weir from her book Redeeming Halloween coming up here on the Faith Radio Network. It's 11:51. We'll be right back.
Now, back to Dr. Bill Meyer live on Faith Radio.
Welcome back. So great to have you with us today. Halloween a week away, and many evangelical Christians wondering, what do I do? Man, do I go to the Harvest Festival? Do I let my kids go trick-or-treating? Do I turn off all the lights and lock the doors and hide under my bed? Kim Weir has dealt with that herself as a young mom several years ago with young children, and her co-author Pam McCune wrote this wonderful book for Focus on the Family called Redeeming Halloween. Also want to mention they wrote a book called Redeeming the Season for Christmas, Bringing Jesus Back into the celebration of Christmas. And that's just a wonderful book. You want to pick that up because over the next couple of months, it'll give you some ideas on getting ready for Christmas and making it a Christ-centered holiday. Okay, Kim, before the break, we were just starting to unpack some ideas for Halloween night itself. When the trick-or-treaters are coming, make your house the brightest, most positive place on the block. Give away those big candy bars. If you're going to give away a Bible verse, don't just hand a kid the four spiritual laws. What are some other things that families can do to redeem Halloween, a day that unfortunately in recent years has become very, very dark, especially in the United States?
Yeah. Well, I love trying to make it a season. So even during this week, one of the great things to do to embrace sort of that faith heritage of Halloween that the church itself created is to look back. Every family loves movie night. You can pop popcorn, make favorite snacks, really make it an event. Everybody come in your pajamas or come in costume if your kids are little. And then do some great sort of age appropriate. If your kids are young, great veggie tales that tell some of the stories of people of faith, you know, Esther and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. There's some great things for that age group. There's some great classic movies if you're talking about preteens or teens, Ben-Hur and the Eric Little story, Chariots of Fire, Bonhoeffer. There's just all kinds of great stories, Martin Luther stories, that are age appropriate. Just make it a movie night, and you'd be helping your kids understand that we stand on the shoulders of some incredible faith giants who came before us, and even have an opportunity after the movie to talk about, you know, people will look back at our lives. And will they be able to say about our lives that they're standing on faith giants because no matter what, we lived for Christ? And it's just a real challenge for your kids. So a movie night is a great thing. Like I said, having your kids pray for those who need to hear about Christ. I love having the parties at our house. You know, you talked about earlier, it's so dark out there. If you send your kiddo to a school friend's house for a Halloween party, quite frankly, you don't know what you're going to get. And you don't get any say-so because it's their party. So we always had the Halloween party at our house. And we made sure they invited not just their church friends or their Christian school friends, but their sports friends and other kids that, you know, we don't know where their family stands spiritually. And then the party centered around really fun activities. Guess what we played? Romans versus Christians flashlight tag. And we told the kids the story about the Romans tried to chase down the Christians in the early years. And so, you know, same game, different focus. We would tell the scary story around the fire while they did s'mores. And guess what the scary stories were? The Roman soldiers, or the story of Perpetua. We did a teenage party where we took them to a cemetery that wasn't far from us. And with the permission, obviously, of the authorities of that managed the cemetery, they went around on a scavenger hunt, and they had to find the oldest tombstone, the newest. You know, they looked for certain things on tombstones. And then when we gathered around and gave prizes for that, we said, well, what else do you notice? We talked about the dash on a tombstone, and that really the most important thing wasn't the born date or the died date. It's what you did in the middle. And then we shared the gospel with them. And so it's really leveraging the opportunities for the season. And so those help us celebrate, and they help us commemorate. If your kids are in school, there's some great things that you can do to ask the teacher, hey, I'd love to come in and share the true history of Halloween with your kids. Take the scary out of spiders by telling them, you know, some fun facts about spiders and bats and different things like that. You know, disarm the symbols of darkness by helping your kids see God's creation in the things that other people have hijacked. So those are all just incredible ways to celebrate. But then don't forget to commemorate. All Saints Day, the first, send a harvest box, not as in harvest from the ground, but harvest of souls. Send a box to a missionary. Get it together on All Saints Day with your family. Fill it full of goodies and then mail it with a note that said, thanks for working in the fields of harvest. Think about All Saints Day. International Day of Prayer for the Persecuted Church is the Sunday afterwards. Participate as a family because there are people being martyred every day, and they need our prayers that they would stand strong. All of that's wrapped up in what we call Halloween and what a lot of us have dismissed, but we don't have to. We really can make it an incredible season of faith for our families.
Oh. Kim, thank you so much. You've just given us some wonderful ideas. Once again, the book is called Redeeming Halloween, Celebrating Without Selling Out by Kim Weir, W-I-E-R, and Pam McCune. Kim is also a speaker, and if you'd like to learn more about her speaking ministry, where do they go, Kim?
KimWeir.com.
All right, KimWeer.com. W-I-E-R, KimWeer.com. And maybe you'd like to have her come to your church to speak about either redeeming Halloween or redeeming the season. I'm Bill Meyer. That wraps things up for today. You have yourself a wonderful weekend. Neil Stavem's Connecting Faith Weekend Edition is up next. Thanks for listening to this podcast from Dr. Bill Meyer Live. If you'd like more information about this show, just go to myfaithradio.com and click on the program page for Dr. Bill Meyer Live.